To me, it gets right back to the business. And the NBA has figured out how people are consuming sports, and they want to get in on it because I think people are tuning out because of all of the delays and things that's going on. So I applaud what Adam Silver and these guys are doing because that's how people consume.
Rick Bucher.
This is a brand new BJ Armstrong. Once upon a time, you and I would have conversations about what the NBA was doing to the game and how there wasn't enough respect for the game. Now you're all on board saying, hey, whatever the consumers want is what the consumers get.
Look, in the end, the consumer is always right. They're always right.
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher.
Welcome to yet another edition of the BJ and Bucher podcast. Four quarters of madness. We have a very special guest in the fourth quarter. Jason Kidd, head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, will be joining us. But we start, as we always do in the first quarter, BJ, with news around the league. And this one hits sort of close to home for you because you have a client in Derrick Rose who's with the New York Knicks. And there's been questions ever since Phil Jackson. Also hits close to home for you, former coach, there's been issues between Carmelo and Phil from the very beginning. And now the latest rumblings are Phil Jackson has asked Carmelo whether he wants to remain a Knick. He has a no trade clause, but it seems as if for the first time, Carmelo is actually warming up to the idea, BJ, that he might end or continue his career elsewhere. So I wonder for you, when you see this happening with a big client of yours directly involved, and you look at the conversation between Phil and Carmelo, where do you think this is going to go?
Well, I think it makes for interesting conversation, you know, whether it's Phil or Melo, he's warming up to the idea or not. I think the bottom line with the New York Knicks right now is, you know, they need to get some wins. Winning covers a multitude of sins. Right now, I think there's been a lot of speculation. I'm not sure how accurate the report is, but the Knicks right now need wins. I mean, they lost a tough game last night to the Phoenix Suns. They've lost some nail biters over the last two or three games. I think one up there in Milwaukee. They are a team right now that's trying to find themselves. You know, they want to win. They want to win now. I mean, Melo is not a young player. He's a player right. That wants to win now. And I think that's the big question. I think that's the elephant in the room.
You and I talked about this team before the season started, and we both liked the roster. We both saw potential with this team. Do you still believe that if Melo stays, that this team is a playoff team and can make noise?
That's a yes and no. But overall, right now, as they are playing today, I would say no. You know, the thing about Carmelo right now, as you watch him, for him to score 20, 25 points is not the problem. Right now is really finding where he fits on the defensive end. I think at this stage of his career, I just happen to believe that he's a power forward.
Right.
I think that's where he's going to have to play and be most effective.
Agreed.
On the floor for the team to have the most success. Defensively, I don't see him chasing threes anymore. I don't see him really getting out in the passing lanes and doing that. I see him now being a stretch four who should be able to utilize his versatility on that end of pushing the ball up, doing a lot of different things. So I think if this team is going to have success moving forward, it's going to be with him as the power forward position. Now, what does that mean to Joakim Noah? What does that mean for Porzingis? I think that's something they're going to have to figure out because offensively they can score, but they're not stopping anyone.
Okay, so there's two parts to that. One, even if you put him at the stretch four, put him at power forward, he's going to have to defend either on the ball, on the block, or he's going to have to be a help defender on drives. Going by the idea that he would buy into this, where do you see him being a better fit if he's playing one of the power positions defensively?
Defensively, I think you just have to utilize his versatility and switch. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to switch. You're going to have to say, where is he on the floor? You know, Carmelo is a physical player, so, you know, he should be able to hold the block and be able to, if a double team is needed, to do that as well. But
yeah,
on screen roll and all that, I think you got to switch. I mean, we're going to have to play. We're going to have to be joined together at the hip. We're going to have to communicate and do those things. And Carmelo is going to have to commit to that end of the floor. But I think where he's at in his career, you got to put him at the four and you got to let him, you know, do things that you're seeing all these stretch forwards do. Ryan Anderson, you switch, you run it into traffic, and you rebound the ball, and whoever rebounds it pushes it out. I think that's where the league is, and I think he's certainly capable of doing that.
See, the other part I wonder about is why they don't, because I don't see them play a whole lot of pick and roll with Derek and Melo.
Right.
And I would think that that could be a really effective way to play. But I don't see it. And I don't know why.
I'm a Joakim Noah fan. I really love Joakim. I was a fan of his when he was in college, and now him being in the pros. I think it's really tough to utilize and play with Joakim Noah if he's not scoring on the other end.
Yep.
So I think Joakim Noah really
has to be part of the pick and roll, because that's the only way he's going to get a shot.
So I think right now it's a spacing issue for them.
Yep.
So I think with one of those guys off the floor, it opens up the game, and they're able to play at the pace that most teams play now, where they're getting threes up and they're playing. It's not really small ball, but they're stretching the floor out.
All right, end of the first quarter. Let's go on to the second. Russell Westbrook.
Oh.
He's the number one point guard in the league, but you wouldn't know that by the All-Star voting process. It's natural to assume that he's going to be in the All-Star game, but he's not one of the five stars.
I would hope so, that he can at least be in that game. I would hope so.
Okay, so there's two ways. I'm going to be a little devil's advocate here, because a lot of people have just been outraged. Oh my goodness, Russell Westbrook wasn't voted into the All-Star game. The fans didn't select him. Steph Curry and James Harden are the backcourt. I was one of the media who had a vote. We actually voted, we the media, that is, the 100-some of us who had votes, selected Russell Westbrook into the starting lineup, but it wasn't enough for him to win the starting role overall. Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate, because in the big picture, really, what does it mean that he's going to be an All-Star? He'll play in the All-Star. He was the All-Star MVP last year, in spite of the fact that he came off the bench. How much does it, what does it mean, BJ? How egregious is this?
I think it means a lot.
Really?
I really do.
For a guy who's never really thought the All-Star weekend is just a corporate showcase.
Well, it is. But you know what? When you have a young man who is putting up the numbers that he's putting up, and we're able to witness something that has only been done once in league history.
Mm-hmm.
I think that has to be recognized and singled out, because this isn't an everyday occurrence where a player at any position puts up a triple-double the numbers that he's putting up are just incredible. The amount of effort and energy this young man puts out is amazing in and of itself. So for him, clearly right now, he is the top performing player in the NBA at this moment. And I think that needs to be recognized, whether it's by the fans, the players, the coaches. Russell Westbrook is the top performing player in the NBA as we speak.
So then I would assume that you have him as your MVP pick right now. And by the way, for a full disclosure, Russell Westbrook is a client of the Wasserman Media Group, and BJ Armstrong is an agent for the Wasserman Media Group.
Look, it is what it is. Russell Westbrook,
because we're all about transparency here on the BJ and Bucher podcast.
This is true. But let's let this be clear. Russell Westbrook is performing. Russell Westbrook is having a phenomenal season.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal.
People are making the comparisons with Oscar, because he is on pace right now to be the first to average a triple-double since Oscar did it in 61-62. But let's be fair. We often talk about how the game has changed. It's not as if Russell Westbrook is doing something. He's doing something that no one has done since 61-62, but it's not as if there were other guys that weren't capable of it. Some of this has to do with how the game has changed. Has it not? Does it not, BJ?
Well, they're clearly playing at a different pace. I mean,
it's small ball. So the rebounds that he's getting, there's different personnel on the floor now.
Well, it is. But the biggest change has been the invitation, if you will, of the stretch four. The stretch four has changed the game, because you have more spacing. You have to defend screen roll differently. I mean, is a screen roll now? It's just screen and pop.
Right.
You're just looking for a matchup. You have basically five shooters on the floor. And just like we talked a while ago about Joakim Noah, you have to be able to score to create the proper spacing on the floor, because now you can play zone. So you need five guys all on the floor who can play. And I think that has been something here that Russell has done, and he's taken advantage of it, because clearly you can't stay in front of him. And now you put shooters around him, It just creates opportunities for him, his teammates, and he is thriving in this system under the rules as they are.
Okay, so here are my starting five in both the West and the East. I have Westbrook, James Harden, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, and Kawhi Leonard as my starters in the West. My starters in the East, John Wall, DeMar DeRozan, LeBron James, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Paul Millsap. I don't know if you selected starting fives. If you did, I'd love to hear them. If you didn't, I'd love to hear what you think about mine.
You know, I didn't have a starting five, but look, Russell Westbrook has to be in there. You know, what Steph Curry has done, he has to be in there. He has to be.
Steph Curry has to be there. So you're taking James Harden out of the starting lineup?
Can I continue to finish my list?
Okay.
I believe that James Harden should be there.
Okay, that's three guards.
That's three. My fourth, Kevin Durant, has to be there.
Okay.
Four, and then my fifth, I think the kid Anthony Davis, or you know, whoever you want to put at that.
Anthony Davis has put up phenomenal
incredible
numbers.
Number.
I agree with that.
I think those are five.
But they're also they were 17 and 26 when the voting closed.
But then you look at it, you go, Kawhi Leonard has had an amazing,
right.
However it shakes out, Russell Westbrook has to be in there. I don't care who you take out of that list. Russell Westbrook right now is the best player in the game as we speak.
Wow.
And you know, that's just a fact. And no one can take that away.
Do you have a better formula for selecting all-stars than the one that we have right now? I do.
Well, I don't have, right off the top, I don't have a formula. Okay. You know, you get the fans, you know, you have the players, but I'm willing to hear. I want to hear the formula.
Try this on. So first of all, we don't open it up to, I know this is a great marketing play for the NBA in which you have everybody around the world, whether they can go to a game or not, they get to vote, and they get to vote as many times as they want. You can vote, I think it's technically you can vote once a day, but we know how the young guns out there, or maybe not even young guns, but those savvy in technology have the capability probably of voting thousands of times if they so choose. I believe that you go back to, you have to be in an arena. You have to go to a game to be able to vote. You give the fans 25%, you give the coaches 25%, you give the media 25%, and you give the players 25%. Because I don't even like the system the way, before we added players and media, I don't like the fact that it's a popularity contest for the first five, and then the coaches pick the next seven. Because when we look at it historically, we just talk about guys being all-stars. We don't think about how they ended up getting there. And so that's my issue. And then I believe either that or you just go popularity contest. And I believe you pick an all Eastern team at the end of the year, an all Western team, and then an all NBA team. And then it's really about, that's where you recognize the guys who are having the best seasons in a particular year, because it's based on the entire season rather than we're picking the most popular guys in February, January. We're picking the guys who have the best season through the first 2.5 months of the season. None of that makes sense for me if we're going to still equate All-Star with being a great player. What do you think?
Well, you know, certainly you will get the, I think you will get the hardcore fan who actually goes to the game and not just watching the game from afar. So I agree with that. You know, I don't know if there's a way that you can actually get to an exact science where you say this is the best way to do it. But I think you have to at least look at what you said as a possibility, because the fact that Russell Westbrook, I can't get off of that, he's not a starter. I can't understand. I can't comprehend that.
Fair enough. If you're averaging a triple-double, you're automatically in as a starter. Maybe that's the new rule.
Has anyone ever averaged a triple-double and not been a starter?
I don't know that anybody has been averaging a triple double over the last. I
mean, Rick, listen to what we're saying. He's averaging
exactly,
a triple double for the entire year.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm with you.
There's nothing to discuss.
You know, Rick, you had a good question the other day about Russell Westbrook's personality and whether or not the snarly side of him might be the reason why fans didn't vote in his favor for the starting position for the All-Star game. Do you think that might actually be a legitimate reason why?
Yeah, well, I think it's a combination. I think it's the fact that he's in Oklahoma City. I think the general perception is that he drove Kevin Durant out of Oklahoma City. And I've always had issue with that. I mean, I've always had issue the way KD was portrayed and the way Russ was portrayed. But that's, you know, that's somebody who's inside the league and sees things. I think from a fan perspective, they really look Russ, you know, they are, it's almost like they begrudgingly respect what Russ is doing as a player. There's still the idea that he's a point guard and he's a selfish point guard. I see that still on social media today. Oh, he's just a ball hog. That's why he's getting the numbers that he is. And even those who respect him, it's like, yeah, well, he plays really hard, but they don't, you know, personality wise.
Yeah.
They're just not down with him. You know what I'm down with?
What's that?
I'm down with some halftime entertainment. Bring it, Shane.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime. Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right, guys, this is Shane on the BJ and Bucher podcast, and this is the halftime break. And this halftime entertainment is brought to you by Busta Rhymes, and this is his song, Everybody Rhymes.
It's the third quarter. You know what that means. Favorite time of the show for some. Hasn't been the favorite time of the show for me lately, but we're about to change that. It is the trivia challenge where BJ and I of late flaunt our lack of NBA trivia knowledge. But let's go. This is going to be all about NBA floor generals. Oh, right there. Once again, Shane tilting the scales toward my co-host, BJ Armstrong, who at one point was an NBA floor general. But I'll start the questioning. BJ, ranked among the top assist getters in NBA history, I scored over 12,000 career points, was an all-star, won NBA Rookie of the Year, and played for seven teams before retiring in 2004. Who am I? Am I Mark Jackson, Avery Johnson, Bimbo Coles, or Steve Kerr?
Read that again.
The qualifications or the list?
I'm
ranked just, among the top assist getters in NBA history. I scored over 12,000 career points. I was an all-star. I won NBA Rookie of the Year and played for seven teams before retiring in 2004.
Who
am I?
Let me shake.
You know what? That's so easy. Are you kidding me? Like Avery Johnson. I don't even know. I'm going to answer for you because I know who you got. Like Avery Johnson, Bimbo Coles, or Steve Kerr ever won Rookie of the Year.
Right.
Come on, Shane.
I'm trying to make it easy for you.
Hey, Shane. You know what this is, Shane?
What's that?
I'm going to give Rick Bucher the alternative facts.
Just give me the next question. Dang.
Okay, here we go. I am the NBA's number two all-time steals leader. Who am I? A, Gary Payton. B, Jason Kidd. C, John Stockton. D, Michael Jordan. Woo, that's a good
Damn
one.
Damn it. That is a terrible one. Because those are good options. Those are really good options. And I can't remember now who the steal leader is. But Payton, Kidd, and that combination right there is tough.
Hey, just do what BJ did last time and type it in.
Hey, no, I was dancing. I was dancing.
You know what? He's talking about last time.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
When you spent like 10 minutes trying to answer a question and we kept hearing that tap, 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 tap in the background.
Okay.
You know what?
Alternative facts again.
My son Matt is right here, and so I'm going to leave it up to him to decide. He's number two in all-time steals in the NBA. Is it Gary Payton, Jason Kidd, Michael Jordan, or who was the fourth?
John Stockton.
Or John Stockton. Who is number two in all-time steals, Matt? It's not Michael Jordan. It's not Gary Payton. We got to go Jason Kidd. Yeah. We're going to go Jason Kidd.
You know what? For the kids, he's right.
Yeah, he's right.
For the kids.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is he right?
He's right.
Is he right?
Yeah.
Matt, way to go,
good
son.
Good job, Matt.
Yeah. I threw a lifeline. Well, I don't know what show that is, but I did. I used one of my lifelines.
What did he say? He typed it in. What did he say? I didn't hear. What did he say?
No.
That's you, BJ. That's you, man.
You know kids today. They don't have typing skills, man. They use their thumbs. They can't do it that fast.
Right.
All right, here we go. Question number three. I hold the NBA record for having 30 assists in one game. Who am I? John Stockton, Kevin Porter, Scott Skiles, or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
He's gritty. He's gutty. He's Scott Skiles.
He quits on teams left and right.
What, is that part of the answer? Wait a minute, is that an alternative fact?
Wow.
What's going on here?
This is again. No, that ain't an alternative fact. That's straight up true. You are correct. On December 30th, 1990, he logged 22 points and 30 dimes to lead the Orlando Magic to a 155-116 blowout victory over the Nuggets. And I knew that one too. All right, what do you got for me?
Okay.
But this is an uphill battle.
Very tough one. I refuse to report to the team after being selected in the 1995 NBA expansion draft. Who am I? A, Rodney Dent. B, BJ Armstrong. C, Benoit Benjamin.
And
D,
it ain't that
Greg
tough.
Anthony. Now, wait a minute. I just want to know. I just want to know.
That, it ain't that tough.
Seriously.
It ain't that tough. I'm looking at him. I'm looking at him right now.
That's so good.
Shane, you know, hey, you know who won? You know who won the trivia challenge this week?
Who's
freaking
that?
Shane Freeman, our producer, won with that question right there.
Yeah.
That is a home run.
You know what?
I was just curious because you know when you did it, you know I'm a fan at the time, so I'm going.
Yeah, that was.
What is BJ doing?
He was afraid he couldn't get back in the country, man. He was supposed to go to Toronto.
Man, there was a lot going on. How much time do we have?
Now you're second guessing that. You're like, man, if I was a Canadian now, I'd be in good shape.
Man, that was a tough one. Shane, that was a low blow.
You know, it's all love, baby.
Man.
All right, tiebreaker, man. So, of these NBA big men, who had the most turnovers? Patrick Ewing, Moses Malone, Vlade Divac, or Tim Duncan?
Wow.
Of these, who?
Interesting.
Who was the first two again?
Patrick Ewing, Moses Malone, Vlade Divac, and Tim Duncan.
I'm going to go Patrick.
BJ, what say you?
I'm going to say, can't be Vlade, because Vlade didn't play as long as the other guys.
Yep.
So it would be Moses or Tim Duncan. Who did you pick, Rick? You picked.
I picked Patrick, but I would. Yeah,
I'm gonna say Moses played a long time. I'm gonna say Moses Malone, but for some reason, I'm gonna say Moses Malone.
You got that one. He holds the NBA record.
It's Moses.
Yeah, it's Moses. He holds the NBA record for the most turnovers by a center with 3,804 career giveaways.
Yeah, he played a long time. He did play a long time.
I just didn't think he ever tried to pass the ball. He just threw it at the he just threw it at the rim and then went and got it.
Right.
Like that doesn't count as a turnover.
Moses sort of he's one of the special people I met
no doubt
in this league. He was just a super, super human being, and
no doubt,
you know, he's really missed in the NBA community and all around. People who ever came in contact with him, what a great man.
Well, congratulations, BJ, you won once again. Although I think because of the question that I answered in order to tie it up, we all won. So, Shane, thank you for that. Let's move on to the fourth quarter, where we will be joined by our guest this week, Jason Kidd. Joining the BJ and Bucher podcast, Four Quarters of Madness, we have none other than the Milwaukee Bucks head coach, Jason Kidd. Jason, thank you so much for taking the time. I'll start here. There's a lot of talk about you being a Coach of the Year candidate this year. And I remember you getting a lot of criticism when you were a coach in Brooklyn and even when you first got to Milwaukee. So how is it that you suddenly figured out how to coach?
No, I haven't figured it out. you know, this is not an easy job. You know, this is you're responsible for a lot of different things. It's different than being a player in the league. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's, you know, I'm learning. I'm still a young coach. I'm going to make mistakes, call the wrong play, have the wrong guy in. But it's fun. It's you know, I look at it as trying to give back to the game that's been good to me, and then trying to help the younger players. We're a young team, and so just try to make the game easy, put guys in a position to be successful and have fun doing it.
So, Coach, so you know, being a point guard and you playing that, you know, that position at such a high level throughout your career, what gave you the idea to say, this is what I want to do. I want to coach. I want to take on that task. What was the turning point for you? Did it happen for you as a player, or was it after your career? What made you want to get into this profession and pursue it?
Well, I think, you know, Father Time is something that's undefeated. And so I knew I couldn't play for a long, you know, much longer. So I started thinking about different parts of the game that, you know, maybe I should try to look at. And while being in Dallas, I started looking at coaching, having an opportunity to play for Rick Carlisle, and just, you know, taking notes on if I was a coach, what would I do, in different, you know, parts of the game. And so, you know, that's when it all started for me. And it's, you know, it's been great because, you know, this is a way to give back. Again, it's not easy because there's so many moving parts going at, you know, at a very fast pace, and you're going to make mistakes. But can you learn from them? And, you know, at the end of the day, it's about getting better. You know, not just, you know, we all are judged on winning or losing, but are we getting better through the process? And you know, hopefully we're doing that here in Milwaukee.
So you've got an all-star at your position, point guard, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and I just wondered, Jay, when you made the decision to move him to point guard, what has it been like to coach a guy who wasn't previously, didn't come up as a point guard and didn't grow up as a point guard in this country?
You know, I thought, you know, watching him my first year, you know, while being in Brooklyn, he had, you know, some skill sets that were different. And so, you know, ending up in Milwaukee, my first thought was, let's see if we can give him the ball and see how he handles it. And then, you know, it didn't go well, and it's all right. You know, we learned, and he wasn't ready. And it's all right not to be ready sometimes. We don't want to say that he failed. But, you know, it's about timing. And we came back to it. We just shelved it and we came back to it. And he was ready. But I thought his skill set is he can make passes, you know, you know, being 6'9", Magic could see things differently and make the game easy for his teammates. And Giannis is going to, you know, be able to do that. And that's what's special about him. He wanted to do it. He's worked extremely hard. And he's just going to get better. And as he gets comfortable with that position, it's going to be kind of fun to watch.
Does the cultural thing come up? Does the fact that he didn't grow up here and, you know, your experience as a point guard growing up here, does that ever come up? Do you ever find yourself realizing, oh, wait a minute, you know what? He didn't have this coming up, or he didn't realize this coming up, or he didn't experience this, that like there's things that he just doesn't know that you've had to remind yourself that he shouldn't know.
Yeah, you know, it's not a cultural thing. I think, you know, for that position, when you've never done it, you know, you didn't start off in CYO playing point guard in high school or college. There's so many moving parts. You're responsible for a lot of different things, and he's only 22 years old. And so that's the only thing is sometimes I forget he's only 22, and you know, he's not going to see everything right away, or it's not going to be smooth. The timing, you know, being able to play that position, getting the ball to your shooters or the guy who's open, you know, because you've seen it so many times, you know, I have to catch myself. He might've missed someone. He's only 22, but the more that we talk about it, you know, he makes the adjustments as fast as anybody that I've been around, and that's what makes it easy for him.
So, you know, the game is, you know, you mentioned it earlier, you know, Magic being 6'8", 6'9", yourself being a big point guard. Can you share your thoughts on how the game is beginning to evolve? It's basically now a positionless league where you have guys like Giannis, you have Porzingis and Karl Towns and Anthony Davis. I don't know if they have a position. But where do you see this going? I mean, will it be eventually just 5 7-footers? Where do you see this league going and evolving to where you just see positionless players? I don't know if they're point guards or what have you, but you're just starting to see terrific athletes playing, rebounding, and doing so many different things.
I think it's going to go to where there will be no positions. It will be, you know, and this is a small sample. You have Harden move over from, you know, shooting guard to the point guard. But I thought he was always a point guard because he had the ball 6 minutes left in the game. Your best player has the ball coming down the stretch. So he becomes your point guard. And, you know, I think you look at Giannis, you know, moving to that position. They're so young and they're playing the game at such a high level, which is really cool to see. But I really think at the end of the day, there's going to, you know, be different guys playing positions that you say, wow, I would have never known that there was, you know, 4 7-footers out on the floor at, you know, point guard, shooting guard. You know, you look at Kevin Durant. Can he play the 2? Can he play the 3? Can he play the 4? Can he play the 5? I mean, like, you know, we shouldn't hold them back because they're 7 feet and they can play different positions. So it's cool. I think, you know, we have a couple of them with Giannis and Fallon Maker, you know.
Thon, right.
He could be a 2, 3, 4 and play the 5 because he's 7 feet. But you know who I think started all this, and you know, he reminded me a little bit, is Danny Ainge in Phoenix when I was playing for him. You know, we played small ball, you know, with Steve Nash, Kevin Johnson, myself, Rex Chapman, and Danny Manning, you know, out on the floor. And you know, we just played. And I wasn't afraid to guard the 4. I had to guard the 4. Rex wasn't going to guard the 4. And, and so, you
I don't
know,
think Rex was guarding anybody. Yeah.
I didn't want to say it that way, but but I think it just, you know, Ainge had a vision that you put your best basketball players on the floor, and they tend to figure it out.
Yeah. One of your better basketball players, Jabari Parker, did not start against Miami, and the story, the way it's being told, is that the players decided that he should not start because he disclosed some conversation that went on within a team meeting. How did that happen, Jay? Like, how does that? I would assume that you normally make the starting lineup. How did it end up that the players had that kind of input?
it just shows the importance of culture. You know, I think it was a pretty cool thing for the players, the responsibility to handle the team rules. And so that's what it was. It's a lesson learned for everybody. It's not. Sometimes we try to look at it or make it bigger than what it was.
Yeah.
But it's just being accountable, you know. And I think we all have made mistakes, and we learn from them, and you know, we move on, and we share those experiences with the other teammates that come on board. That this is what we stand for, and I thought the players did a really good job with it, and so, I thought Jabari handled it well.
Did you go to them and say, how do you want to handle it? Or did they come to you and say, hey, we want to handle it, or this is how we want to handle it?
No, I think it's a combination of, you know, how do you guys want to handle it? This is what you guys want to stand for. So they took the responsibility, which is, you know, I give them credit for handling it, and, everybody understood, and we moved on. And again, it's kind of cool to see guys, you know, take the responsibility of holding each other accountable.
For sure. Coach, before we let you go here, I got to ask a question. I always ask coaches when we have come on a show. I watch the game from afar. Everyone seems to defend screen roll differently. What's your thought now on how screen roll has been defended today as to when you were playing as a player?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, the game has changed in a positive way for sure. There's so many more threes taken. There's so many more shooters on the floor that, you know, being aggressive with the pick and roll, you had different coaches' philosophy is take the ball out of, you know, playmaker's hand and make the big, make a decision, you know, make them the decision maker. Now the bigs can shoot it from the three. They're better at making decisions. And so, you know, you're trying to make the ball go to the person that you want to shoot, you know, but now you got three or four shooters on the floor. And so it's hard. The pick and roll is, you know, one of the oldest plays in the game. And now it's become one of the hardest. It's always been one of the hardest to guard because the effect of you have one of your best players with the ball who's going to make a decision. And now with everybody standing outside the three-point line and everybody seems to be shooting over 35%, it just puts you in a bad way. And you got to try to find a way to stop the ball. Then you got to give a little bit more effort to run off the three-point shooters. So it's hard.
Well, Jason, as always, really appreciate the time and the insight, and look forward to seeing you down the road. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, Coach.
I appreciate it, guys.
All right,
thanks. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thanks, man.
All right.
You got it. Thanks again for joining us. Remember, if you're listening from iTunes, be sure to subscribe to the show and log on, and you can rate and leave a review. It's the only way we get to know how you think we're doing and what you would like to see us do different with the show, if there is anything. I can't imagine. Also, check out our brand new website, bjandbuecher.com. We're going to have all of our podcasts there. You can access them, and we're going to have some additional material. I've just finished a piece about Tim Hardaway Jr. and why I defended him so vociferously on Twitter after he had his big game against San Antonio. But look for that material. We're going to have some other written material there as well by me and other writers. Again, thank you for joining us. You can still follow us on Twitter as well, @BJ and Bueker. Hope you enjoy the show. We'll see you again next week.